Something coming faster than any of us can imagine and will change our lives in the most dramatic ways is AI.
And while AI used to sound freaky to me and just something that was going to take over my world, it really would have revolutionized my practice had I stuck around. Many of you know, I got so burnt out from charting. It was the big reason I left medicine because I was frustrated with the EMRs, the clunkiness, and the amount of time it took to learn them. Not only that, but not being able to sit and connect with a patient and look them in the eye, like one-on-one while you're actually interacting with them, the whole reason we went into medicine, not to do paperwork.
Yeah, so that's why May and I have started working with Lindy.ai, which is fascinating. They help you produce the most efficient notes, fully customizable, which is different than some other AI products, so you can do what you do best, which is see patients and let the artificial intelligence scribe do the dirty work for you.
Yeah, not only do you get the perfect patient notes the way you want, written in any format, for whatever specialty you're in, and maybe you're in ophthalmology or vet medicine, it will also create the note, scribe and send the patient follow-up instructions, referral letters, consultation notes. It's amazing. Lindy is offering our listeners a 7-day trial to experience the difference of their AI medical scribe. Go sign up at lindy.ai/bsfree to get started. That is Lindy, lindy.ai/bsfree.
Finally, a source of raw, real, and honest information on healthcare issues that matter most. Welcome to BS Free MD. From the latest medical information to how to stay sane as a doctor or a patient, no subject is taboo, no BS is allowed. Now, let's welcome your hosts, Drs. May and Tim Hindmarsh.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back again to our guest interview on BS Free MD with your hosts, co-hosts, Tim and May Hindmarsh here today. We have a very special episode that touches the heart today of every parent and guardian. And our guest is Seek Smith, who is a remarkable advocate for children and the sanctity of the family unit. With 23 years of marriage and 3 children, Seek has dedicated her life to protecting the innocence of the young and building communities of heart-led individuals. She is the founder of Mom Army and Dad Army, organizations committed to ending the cycle of sexual abuse and exploitation and ensuring a safe society for women and children. Seek is a truth-minded warrior, a free thinker, and a fearless leader in the fight for justice. Today, we're going to talk about exploring the challenges that our children face in today's world and the importance of the family in safeguarding innocence, and how Seek and her armies are on the front lines battling against the over-sexualization and exploitation of our youth. So we are so delighted to have her with us today. Welcome, Seek Smith, Mom Army General.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to share.
So as I was, you know, chatting and sharing with you earlier, I really think I just found you because of some of the groups that I'm following on Instagram. And when I saw Mom Army and this whole movement and what you're doing to really take back and fight for our children's rights, the exploitation of kids and the family unit where things are going, I'm like, this is amazing. So why don't you start with sharing with our listeners, like, what motivated you, first of all, to start Mom Army?
I'll go further back. So about 15 years ago, I got involved in fighting child sex trafficking. And there's a whole story behind that of how that came to be. But fast forward to about 2 years ago, I started to feel this overwhelming sense of, oh my God, our children are under attack, and it's coming from every direction. It's coming from so many institutions, education, entertainment, medical system, our government, you know, and so on and so forth. And it was just this kind of aha moment. I was in the driveway with my husband. I told him, you know, like, there's literally a war on our children. And he usually does the usual. He plants the seed and then he says, you know, you work with all these incredible people across the country and advocates for children. Why don't you guys come together in a more unified voice and maybe do like a million mom march in DC or something? Like he kind of throws this little idea out. And I was like, yeah, you know, we really need to come together for this. And so I started making phone calls and Zooms and reaching out to people I've worked with, people I'm friends with, and then even people I just admire from afar on Instagram or on social media. And, you know, fast forward, like a couple months later, we launched on August of 2022 on Instagram with about 100 warriors, what I deem warriors. And it just took off from there. I mean, I think people started DMing us going, oh my God, I love this. And we launched this million outrage moms because I was so outraged and I didn't know what to do with my outrage. And, but we quickly morphed to Mom Army, I would say just like a week or 2 weeks later, because I started to notice, I have background in marketing and PR and branding. And so I started to notice the lingo of using the military lingo, you know, war on children and, you know, going into the battle to protect our children. And so it just made sense to brand it Mom Army at the time. And started getting messages from all over, you know, how can I get involved? How can I be a part of this? We got messages from Peru and New Zealand and Ireland. And I mean, it was flooding in from all over the place. And then I knew that it was the right time. Like people were watching what was going on and realizing like we all need to step up and we can't be silent anymore. And there were groups prior to us, obviously fighting for parental rights, you know, Moms for Liberty, Moms for America have been around for, I believe, 30 years. But I think there's something so unique about the time that we're in right now where we're seeing the blatant attacks on our children. And I think that's what's alarming a lot of people and getting people activated.
I kind of want to go back a little bit because I've heard this story, but when you say that you've been fighting against child sex trafficking 15 years, you know, a lot of people, especially in the US, don't even really think about it a whole lot until, what was the movie that came out recently with Jim Caviezel? Yes.
Sound of Freedom.
And people, you know, or the ones that have seen it were kind of like blown away, like, wow, I mean, that's a thing in America. Us in healthcare, you know, we were aware of some things going on. Or occasionally you'd see a sticker in a bathroom, you know, in the women's bathroom to call a number. But it wasn't really on the forefront of people's minds, I think, until now what's happening with societal changes in the last 3 to 5 years. So can you take us back like 15 years ago and how did you get involved that far back?
Yeah, I was living in LA at the time. I'm originally from California. And I was driving home listening to talk radio, which I usually do on my drive home. And there was this horrific case going through its sentencing phase out of Trenton, New Jersey at the time. And the gist of the story was a 9-year-old girl was sold for $100 by her 15-year-old stepsister to 5 men. I don't need to go any further than that. So the details of that case was coming through the sentencing phase. And my heart just shattered into a million pieces. I just couldn't believe, you know, at the time I had 2 young boys. We were living in a gated community. I was, you know, living my American dream and doing the mom thing and working a career and all of that. And it just shattered my reality. It was just like, how could this be a thing? Like, how could somebody violate a child in such a horrific manner and for profit on top of that? And so I walked into the kitchen after I pulled in my garage and I was crying uncontrollably and I had to calm my husband down, tell him I was okay. And from there, it was, I can't unhear this. I can't unfeel this. I have to do something. And that started my journey. I started going down research, rabbit holes, whatever you want to call it, and came across a woman named Somali Mom, who happens to be Cambodian like me. And 2 military officers had started an organization for her called the Somali Mom Foundation, and they were based in New York. So I picked up the phone, called the organization. Hey, my background's in marketing and PR. I'm an event planner. How can I help? Use me however you can. And I end up becoming their LA ambassador. And I was doing these gala fundraisers in Beverly Hills with young, up and coming young actresses at the time, like Shay Mitchell, who was on the show Pretty Little Liars. Now my friend Annalyn McCord, who was on the show The CW 90210. And it was just all these other celebrities who was starting to kind of be the face and supporting this and this cause and bringing this cause to the forefront. And that's how I got started. But I did everything from sitting on panels at film festivals to awareness campaign. Even during COVID, I organized 2 marches for Save the Children in Hollywood. with a couple of friends when after the George Floyd riots, I'm like, wait a minute, if they can be out there rioting and screaming about this, what about the children? So I gathered some friends. We ended up garnering about 2,500 people in Hollywood in August of 2020 for the Save the Children rally. So whatever it is that I could do to bring awareness to this, to change hearts and minds, to, you know, to raise money, I was, you know, that was wherever I could fit in. But that's kind of how it all started.
Oh, that's awesome. Let's talk some more about Mom Army. I mean, it is nationwide now. So how did things kind of grow? How did you get more moms involved? And who are the, you know, the main people kind of leading this at this point?
Well, it's interesting because I've been building communities for a while now. I have another community called Badass Do-Gooders, which I actually recently just launched. So connecting people and building community is not new to me. That's something I've always been very passionate about and bringing people together. And so when we launched and I started getting these messages, the first thing we thought was like, well, let's start some chapters. Let's find leaders in those communities. And that's what we did. We started finding people who were already doing the work on the ground. They just needed extra support. And that's what we decided that Mom Army was going to be this support system for people who are already passionate about these issues, passionate about children. So, yeah, we started. And I mean, right away, I think we garnered 20 chapters. And so that was August. And immediately I was getting connected with different people. I got Pam. Pam came on board right away. The Truthful Therapist, for those that follow her on social media. And she connected me with Erin Friday, who is the co-lead for Our Duty, which is a parent support group of kids who have detransitioned or have been swept into the gender ideology stuff. And so I got together with Erin, helping her to do her first protest, her first rally, which was October of 2022 in Anaheim, in front of the American Academy of Pediatrics conference. It was their 38th annual. And we were protesting their policy of fast-tracking children that would come into their pediatrics office, and they would be, you know, if they were declared gender confused, they would fast-track them to a gender clinic. And I think it was Resolution 27 or something. Don't quote me on that, but I believe that was the resolution. And we wanted them to rescind that resolution and change that policy. Well, we, you know, and so we gathered for this protest. Erin had put all her own money into it. I got Jamie from Gays Against Groomers part of it. And we were building this coalition of people who just cared deeply about children and this medicalization that was taking place. And so we had Christian groups, lesbian groups. I mean, you name it. I mean, we were all coming together, Moms for Liberty, Moms for America. I don't think Moms for America was part of it, but in any case, we were coming together with this coalition. And so that's kind of how it all started. And I was just getting plugged into different initiatives and different people. And yeah, and we just have all banded together to work on a lot of these issues together.
I mean, it really, a couple things that you've said have really struck me. First of all, I love the whole concept of people from unbelievably divergent backgrounds coming together because they care about kids. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think they care about liberty. So I'm imagining the parking lot of this meeting where you have, you know, the Christian parents and the Gays Against Groomers. And so you have a parking lot full of Volvos and Subarus. Well, it's funny because it's true. The other thing that really hit me and I'm sure we'll get into this in more detail, but the concept that people from Peru, from UK, from New Zealand are calling you. And you know, it's easy to get into this. There's, you know, this Illuminati, one mind that's controlling this. I don't think that that's the case. But it is a contagion that has infected the entire world, this gender identity contagion, this, you know, minor attracted persons thing, like all of this weirdness. And yet, It only, from my perspective and from what we believe, it only goes one place, which is spiritual warfare. I mean, this is there's no other logical explanation. I don't believe that there's a bunch of Klaus Blofeld, bald, you know, crazy people controlling and pulling these strings. It's more than that, in my opinion. And so, you know, on your website, you have the quote from Esther, "For such a time as this." And what always gets me is the verse before that, which is when Mordecai came to Esther and said, you know, you were put in this position to be the queen for such a time as this. And she's like, yeah, but if I speak to the king and he doesn't want to see me, I'll die. And then before, when she makes her mind up, she goes, if I perish, I perish. And it has been so rewarding to meet people like you, where really it's like, if I perish, I perish. But this is a hill I'm going to die on.
Yeah. This is the hill I'm going to die on. Yeah. Our, you know, the one thing I should, you know, also talk about is Mom Army is a survivor-led organization. So more than half of our chapter leaders are survivors of child sex abuse, and even a couple who were trafficked as children. And I think they bring such a unique, I'm not a survivor myself. You know, I do a lot of work supporting survivors, but they bring such a unique perspective and passion around this fight because they can see the grooming from a mile away, you know? And so for them, the red flags are going off like crazy. And they're just, how are people okay with any of this stuff? And, you know, I always joke, I'm like, my moms are the ones that are going to grab their dogs and grab their guns. And they're like, I'm ready. You know, and I'm thinking of one mom specifically, my Sacramento chapter leader. That's literally who she is, you know, and we need people like that. We need people who are unafraid. We need people who are fearless, that there is a clear line drawn when it comes to protecting the innocence of children and safeguarding them. And that's who I'm looking for. I'm looking for warriors who are willing to be on the front line, willing to die on this hill, in order to, you know, create a future that safeguards children.
Other thing that's really powerful is all politics is local, you know, the old saying. And really, mm-hmm. we're going to change, you know, it's great to change stuff in D.C. I get that. But if you really want to change the world, you got to change your own community. And something like Mom Army empowers people to go to the PTA meetings, to go to their local mm-hmm. politics, where they can affect the most amount of change. And that is the pressure point. That's the leverage point that really will change the country and will change hearts and minds. And the thing that's fascinating is you change mm-hmm. hearts first. So like the American Academy of Pediatrics. Why would anyone take their child to somebody board certified in pediatrics if they don't know the difference between a boy and a girl? Like, that seems fundamental to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's interesting. I love that you brought the heart, you know, the coming from, you know, our logo has a heart in it with the camel filled in it, right? And that's really on purpose. You know, I really wanted to start an organization that was boots on the ground, activated. I remember saying to people, I'm like, I don't want to be a keyboard warrior group. I know there's some impact that you can make, you know, online, but really, like you said, localized activism and mobilization is really what's going to change a lot of this. And the heart was on purpose because I wanted to be coming from a place of love for children, not hate for anybody, you know? And so we talk about that consistently in our leadership trainings and our meetings, but it is about local activism. I mean, my Temecula chapter leader, who has been very active in her community, she helped elect school board members on the last election cycle. She has helped activate the local community. She brings really amazing people together. And so she's a perfect fit for what we do because she's already doing it. You know, I'm the kind of person, I don't want to add to people's plate because moms are already busy people to begin with. I mean, I'm not kidding. My North Carolina chapter leader, Charlotte chapter leader, Lisa, has 14 children. She's got 3 adopted and 11 of her own. And she is every weekend, like, protesting all ages drag shows. I kid you not. Every time I turn around, I'm like, Lisa, what's going on in Monroe? Like, what's happening there? But I do. I identify the leaders that are already on the ground, and we find ways to support what they're doing locally and the school board meetings and going to their legislative hearings, you know, for committee hearings for laws at their state capitals. You know, and when they want to protest. So whatever we can do to rally, mobilize, you know, build coalitions for them on the ground, that's really what our focus
is. Can you share a little bit about, like, the protests? Because I hear a lot of times people protesting for causes showing up. I mean, it brings awareness, but do you have any stories of success and change that happens? I mean, because it definitely, mm-hmm. you know, brings attention, it gets on the news or whatever, but
yeah.
What kind of change does it ultimately affect compared to, you know, I'm yeah. thinking compared to I'm going not, you know, to a school board and voting or something.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting you brought that up because, you know, I have really honed in and I said our biggest strategy is the two. Well, we have 3L strategies. So our 3L strategy. So one is legislation, you know, policy change at, you know, with lawmakers. there's litigation. We have Ryan as our legal partner with the Gavel Project, you know, figuring out where we can in lawfare, right? And then in law enforcement, right? With so we're trying to build partnerships with sheriff's departments. I think the sheriff has a really big role in protecting children. You know, they are elected officials, they abide by the Constitution and that sort of thing. So that's really the strategy. So it's interesting you brought up protests, because we started off doing protests. You know, we did the first Do No Harm protest with Aaron Friday in Anaheim against the American Academy of Pediatrics. We were also the group behind the nationwide protest against Balenciaga when that whole thing happened. And that was interesting because one of my girls, my mom's in Phoenix, came to me the Sunday night. This was right after the story broke, you know, right around Thanksgiving. She goes, "We need to protest Balenciaga." And I'm usually very supportive and uplifting. And I said, "Yeah, but what's one protest going to do?" You know, it's like I knocked her down in like 2 seconds. Thinking back, I was like, maybe that was a little harsh. And she goes, "Well, I don't care. I'm going to go stand outside of Balenciaga at Fashion Square all by myself." And I was like, "You know what, Ginny? I don't doubt you would do that. I know you would go stand out there by yourself." And then my mind started rolling. You know, the wheels started turning. I was like, wait a minute. What if it's not just one protest? What if we had multiple simultaneous protests? And I said, you know, we have 20 chapters. So I message our Telegram and say, "Hey guys, what do you think about doing a nationwide protest? Would you be willing to host a rally and a protest in your city?" Right away, 16 of our chapter leaders were like, "Absolutely yes." And so that was Sunday. Monday, I contact Jamie from Gays Against Groomers. "Hey, I have this idea to do a nationwide Balenciaga protest. You want to be a part of this?" She said, "Yes." So we joined forces. We put out a little flyer saying we were going to do this on Saturday, which was just 5 days later. So we organized a 20-city nationwide protest 5 days later. That was actually a really effective one because it kept that issue out at the forefront of the news. We ended up getting covered by the Daily Wire, Rebel News, Daily Mail did a whole piece about it because my friend Anna Lynn, who's also on our advisory council, led the protest in front of the Beverly Hills store. And so that made the Daily Mail. And then she went on to Sky News with Australia that night on a live interview. It kept that story out there and really put pressure. We wrote an official letter explaining our position and why this was, you know. So we actually wrote a letter to Balenciaga and sent it to them with actually my friend Anna Lynn wrote that letter. And then we co-signed the letter with her. So there are effective ways to protest. The bigger you make it, the better. If it's one little protest in one local city, it's not going to make a dent. If it's a very local issue, sure. But if it's a big issue like that, where it was a sexualization of children through this campaign ad with this big fashion house, international billion-dollar fashion house that was tied to Kim Kardashian and Kanye West and all these big celebrities. And there was a lot of pressure put on. I mean, people went after Kim Kardashian over this whole thing. So yes, there are effective ways to do protests, but we've actually pulled away from protests a little bit because I am in the feeling in this day and age of information. If you're not awakened by now, I don't know what else to do to get you to understand what's actually happening. So I think the protests can sometimes just be a flash in the pan, a waste of time. So we really shifted our focus to litigation, policy making, and those types of things.
Wonderful. No, I was. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a bit about, you know, it should be obvious. I'm thinking of whether the key issues that, you know, our kids are facing and that you're fighting for, but do you want to go over some of the biggest things you see? You know, we talked about the child sex trafficking, I mean, as well as, you know, all the stuff we're facing with gender ideology. What are the mm-hmm. biggest things that you guys are involved in?
Yeah, you know, our mission is to protect children and their innocence. That's a that's a big tent, you know, to cover, right? And, you know, and it can, you know, and ours is heavily focused on the innocence of children and sexual abuse and trafficking, where a lot of other mom groups or parent groups are very hyper focused on mm-hmm. the education side. Although we do have that as one of our pillars. It's everything, right? I mean, I think especially what we're seeing today with media and, you know, after COVID, you know, that the targeting of children through the medical system. I mean, we're seeing everything from the family court system and how that's breaking families apart. You know, we have Adam Vina in our Dad Army group who lost custody of his son, now 5-year-old son, for not affirming his made up gender. you know, his ex started dressing their 2-year-old in a dress. Whoa. You know,
what?
Yeah. He lost custody of a 5-year-old mm-hmm. because the 5-year-old was supposedly a different gender.
What?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What? Wait.
Hang on. We just gotta pump the brakes on this.
I'm like, what state is that? Yeah. I've heard you say this before. California. These kids are born in the wrong state. I mean, this is just insane. Who would support that?
Who, like how? Mm-hmm. How you have somebody who could barely use a toilet, and you're saying that mm-hmm. you can somehow mind read that they think they're a different gender because the boy wanted. Yeah. I mean.
Well, yeah, the mom started at the age of 2 putting his son in a dress. And when he found out, he's like, my son is a boy. Do not put him in a dress. And, you know, so they had this kind of like verbal back and forth on text message and everything. And that was when he was 2 and he's 5 now. He hasn't seen, held or had any contact with his son for about 3 years now. And every system is against the dad. To me, the dad that is the safe dad, that is the protective father, protective parent, is now being pushed out of the child's life. The court system has deemed him, you know, I mean, he's never been deemed to be unfit as a parent because usually that's how you take custody away. It has to be neglect, you know, neglect or abuse or to be deemed unfit. None of those things have ever been established. I mean, this is a dad who has a clean record, no criminal record. You know, no domestic violence, nothing like that. And he has been completely railroaded in the family court system in California to take custody away from him and give it to the mom who's affirming the new gender. I mean, there was an email that she sent out to his preschool asking everybody to now call him a she with his new name. And if you're confused about that or you need to learn more, you can come see me. I can give you some books. I mean, she's telling all the other parents of the other children that she would school them on this if they weren't, you know, if they, whatever. I mean, it frustrates me because I can't believe we live in a world where this delusion is being propagated and being supported by, like I said, every system, the judge, the lawyers. Everybody has turned against his dad. And so we've been helping Adam get his story out since, gosh, about last summer or no, well, last spring.
So was when I first got in contact with him. The that's abusing the child would be the mother. And it's almost like a Munchausen's mm-hmm. by proxy where she's living.
Well, because she gets attention because she has this, this whole.
But
the other thing it does is just fascinating. If you look at those studies that show, you know, one of the single greatest predictors of success across the board is whether you have a custodial father. If you have a father, if your mother and mm-hmm. father are married, they stay married, they have a reasonably successful marriage, and you have a father in the home, a male in the home, preferably your biological father, you do better in life, mm-hmm. period. End of story. So if you want to destroy society.
Yeah, that's not disputed. Yeah. That's been, I think everybody has agreed upon that.
So if you want to destroy society, then the first place you go when you want to break up families is you take the dads out. And so, mm-hmm. you know, yep. toxic masculinity, you know, mm-hmm. the mother always gets to be the custodial parent. I mean, on and on. I mean, this goes back almost generations. Yeah. I mean,
it's that, and it's even more cynical. Adam brought this up the last time he was in town and we were together, or actually I was with him when I was in California. He says, there's no profit in giving the child to the safe parent. The profit is in giving the child to a situation or environment where he or she can be traumatized. So then you have therapists that need to be paid. You have court ordered stuff. You have all these mechanisms of these institutions that is making a ton of money off of this child. If the child was with Adam, there would be no money to be made off that child. And that's really the truth of the matter.
Other than like fishing poles and baseball bats. No, you'd be doing
there's kid stuff. I mean, there's something a lot deeper at the core of what's happening with when you look at people who you think are intelligent human beings, such as judges, physicians mm-hmm. that buy into all this, like what is happening to our society? Because when, you know, you're thinking, is a judge really thinking about, oh, there's more money to be made if I keep this kid in the system, or a physician? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking not usually that is not on the forefront. Yeah, maybe pharma's mind. So what mm-hmm. do we do? And like, how do we whack common sense back into people that are supposed to be running society and be highly educated that are voting for this, that make the laws, that control the systems that take, I mean, I don't even know where to start.
I mean, in all honesty, if we're talking solution, we need to get, everything is so ideologically bent now, right? People are so like heels dug in into their ideology. For us, it's not. It's protecting children is not political, but unfortunately, they've deemed that very political. I mean, we get called all kinds of names. We're transphobic, homophobic, we're bigots, we're everything under the sun, you know? But the solution would be to get good people into these positions of power. Honestly, that's really, we need good people to rise up. We need good people to step up, and we need to support those people. As a society, we need to rally around those people. When we have someone who is protecting children's innocence and protecting parental rights, get those people into seats of school board, get those people into seats of state assembly and Senate and city council and all the other positions that we can, you know, rally around. And we need to stop supporting organizations, institutions, corporations that are pushing these things on, you know, that are harming our children. And that's really the power of the people to come together to do that. I mean, that's the only logical solution, because I feel like it's a, you know, I told my husband the other day, I said, you know, when we watch Hollywood movies about the zombie apocalypse, God, we had that all wrong. Mm-hmm. This is it. It's mass psychosis of people who have fallen into this, like, really something out of a movie. You know, it feels very discombobulated sometimes when we talk about this, because I'm like, how are we even having these conversations? Because it seems so unreal.
It's true.
You know, it doesn't, like, the logical mind can't wrap your head.
I always reference the fact that I remember watching The Hunger Games when it first came out and seeing, I don't know if you've watched that movie at all.
Now we're like praying that it's just The Hunger Games.
No, but the you know, when they had the Capitol and people are dressed up as furries and fluffies and different, and I'm like, that's what's happening to society, kind of joking. And now it's that and worse when we're taking a 5-year-old away from a parent who doesn't want his kid to wear a dress.
But there's a common
now the child must wear a dress. I mean, that's basically what we're siding with.
There's a common emotional thread that goes through all this, and it's weaponized fear. Okay. So if you're not, if we are truly not scared of being called transphobic or whatever, a homophobic or deutalitisophobic, then it doesn't matter. Call me whatever you want, because I don't care what you call me. Yep. I care what we do to kids. So call me whatever phobe you want. You're fine. I mean, actually, I'm idiot-a-phobic. So yes, maybe there's that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, you look at these doctors. Like, I remember this conversation I had with a physician assistant, great guy, completely opposite end of the political spectrum from me. And he has been his whole life, but he's honest. And he says, Dr. Heimarsh, come look at this chart with me. So look at this chart. This kid was, I think, 11 or 12 years old, had some weird gender something or other. And it was like immediate, one visit. Pediatrician is like scared to death. You can almost taste the fear. I'm editorializing. Mm-hmm. Send to Portland, Oregon, to gender clinic. Well, you know, once they get into that vortex, they're not getting out. And and why?
Yeah.
Well, you could sit down there as a pediatrician and say, you know what? It's pretty common for kids to have some weird thoughts, even to have transient thoughts of suicidal. And they don't necessarily mean anything bad. It's just part of developing as a kid. But instead, if you're scared and you don't want to be an outlier, you just send them into the system. And the system has been totally corrupted.
Yeah. It's a system of fear. You're right, because now we have a system where pediatricians and doctors and all sorts of people can lose their license, right? So it's a policy being set from the top down. And so you instill this vast amount of fear across the board. So, and you know, you just have to look back to recent history and, you know, books like The Ordinary Man, and you're like, well, how could the Holocaust happen? How could genocide happen? You know, and that's, you know, with my dad who escaped genocide and communism in Cambodia, I ask these questions a lot. Like, how is it that seemingly very intelligent people, smart people, ordinary people go along with such atrocities? It's an atrocity to me with the whole gender. You know, we call it what it is. We call it mutilation, sterilization of children. Mm-hmm. It's a eugenics agenda. You know, it's a depopulation agenda. I don't apologize for speaking out like this, because people need to understand what this actually means, right? You can look at what's happening with the gender ideology, and that's the only conclusion you can come up with if you have any ability to think freely, right? And so for me, it is, you're right. I mean, to your point, it's this environment of fear. And so people are afraid to, they don't have the moral courage to speak up. Their livelihoods are being threatened. I mean, and that's tangible and that's happening. And I know that because I just got back from a trip to DC with a small coalition. Kelly Walker, my dad army, one of our dad army guys, have been spearheading this for the past 3 years because he had been targeted. He was one of the first dads to be arrested at a school board meeting within 30 seconds of speaking at the school board. And it's been well documented, you know, and all of these things. They smeared him. He lost his coffee business. He ended up having to flee Tucson and move to Tennessee. You know, they took $10,000 from his home sale as a fine, you know, illegally withholding that money. We were in D.C. for a meeting about the targeting of parents, pushing for a congressional hearing. We were in there with Jim Jordan's office and a couple other congressional leaders. So the fear is real. I mean, I have parents in my group who've lost their jobs, who have been, you know, doxxed, their home address put online. So it makes it really hard to speak up and it makes it really hard to do the right thing because of the system that is in place right now.
I'm saying it out here now to the world.
I know what she's saying.
It happened to me. And I was... as a medical professional, isolated and stood up against the ideology, the mandatory training, and pushed back in the system. And I said, no, I don't believe in this. I'm not buying it. I see patients and treat them all the same. I love all my patients the same and treat them with respect, but I'm not playing your game. And I was
good for you.
Canned, but threatened big time, license, all kinds of stuff, and shut down and fear because I felt alone and didn't really know anybody else going through this. And they make you feel ashamed and they treat you and belittle you. And then you feel like, man, I have no morals. And so there's tactics that they use to do this, as well as the punitive and financial scare tactics, like they're going to bleed you of money. And so as a physician, you know, trying to speak up against that, having lived through it, I mean, now I'm almost I'm the other way. I'm like, I'm ashamed that I didn't speak out and didn't have the moral courage to stand up. But
well,
I have other,
but you
we
did.
Have, we have other call. Well, now in that system, we have other colleagues. Finally, I mean, they're getting fired left and right because they refuse to do the plastic surgeries on these children or their kids. They refuse to.
We know. I was at an event where a surgeon lost his contract with the hospital because he wouldn't go along with
just
the surgeries.
Know that we worked with, that same thing happened to them. But they're still afraid, and there's so this. You know, this conversation we hope is helping also those professionals be able to speak up and not be afraid to be out there and standing up and sharing their stories too, because there's so many.
Yeah, but there's a critical piece to this puzzle, and it's the linchpin, and it's the legal side, because we're one or two cases away from the dam breaking, and then and you got to reverse the fear paradigm, because you should be scared. We need to get to a point where if you're a pediatrician and you go along with what the AAFP says about gender, that you're going to lose your freaking house. You need to be scared absolutely shitless that's the case.
If we want to talk about like being on the right side, wrong side of history, everyone always thinks like, oh, if I was growing up during that time or I was living during that time, that this is what I would do. Give me a break. I mean, we see it all around us, right? Like most people will not, you know, I mean, I'm in a good place because I don't work for anybody. I don't have a boss to answer to. I don't work for a corporation. My last corporate job was almost 10 years ago. You know, my husband is the provider. We protect his identity. No one knows who he is. Good luck finding Brian Smith in America, because there's probably a million of them, you know? And so for us, it's like I'm at the forefront. I'm the public figure. I'm really out there about this, but I really, you know, his job isn't threatened, you know, and that sort of thing. And so we do it in a way where it protects our family, but that you're right. I mean, the lawfare is the next step, right? When we can get to, I mean, Chloe Cole is suing Kaiser. I was just with Chloe Cole the other day in Temecula when we were having our roundtable Temecula meeting. You know, so there are people willing to speak up, stand up, and go the extra mile, right, to really make an example and get us on the other side of this, right, so that the people who are afraid should be the people who, you know, we shouldn't be afraid. Right. It should be the other side who's committing these crimes against children. I mean, that's what we're facing. You know, it's probably next to COVID, it's a modern medical scandal, you know, that this is being done to children. And the carnage is there. The examples of what the destruction and the devastation is happening right in front of us. But so many people don't want to see it. What are you waiting for? Like 10 people isn't enough? 1,000 kids is enough? What are you waiting for? Millions of people? You know? I always say, you know, what side of history do you want to be on? Because history isn't going to look so kindly on these people.
To your point about the medical scandal, I mean, we've been seeing it for years when and we share this a lot in our podcast, how, you know, we go through med school and the whole transgender thing was, I don't even remember if we even learned anything about it. I remember my career, it was, I'm trying to think what year, 2000, when I had encountered the first patient who was a man that had been a female transitioned and came in to have a pap smear. I'm like, why is this man on the schedule for a pap smear? There's got to be a mistake, right? Thinking was a clerical error. And then there was whispering and like, no, this is really he was a woman. And it was like, oh, and I'm like enlightened, you know, this is back in the 2000s. Fast forward to that, I'd get a patient who had been abused and she was a lesbian and then decided to transition and was going up to Portland. And that was like the big, for me, that was in 2010. I was like, wow, they're doing this now. But all of a sudden in the last 5 years, and that, working in an urgent care, that's where we've been the last few decades, actually. But we're seeing, you know, I don't know how many people a week coming in now, adults, kids that are, you're right, 10 years old, and they identify as whatever. And I'm like, what has happened with this sudden uptick? Mm-hmm. And we said, this is like, we think back to like when we used to do lobotomies on people for mental illness. I'm like, this is the new lobotomy. This is cruel. Yeah,
except
wrong.
It's way worse.
It's way worse.
Because, in most
I have a couple of trans friends. My friend Matt Ray, who's with Gays Again, he calls it the modern day lobotomy. And you know, he transitioned as an adult and he is regretting his transition, you know, so you're starting to see these stories. I was just with a trans friend the other day when I was in DC, and she's starting to connect the dots of her trauma and her sexual abuse to the transitioning. And so people are coming to terms with it. And this is what the big thing that we're missing. And it's interesting because there's a couple of things at play here. The social contagion, you know, social media, all of the things that are just kind of wrapping people up into this. But also Obamacare in 2012, when Obamacare passed, it was mandatory that insurance company covers transgender surgeries. And that you can actually map it and see the uptick.
The last time we spoke to Peter McCullough, he's talked about how that little linchpin in the Obamacare took all these autogynophiles. So men with a fetish where they like to look like women, but they never have bottom surgery because they want to be men or gay men or whatever whatever they are, but they like to have breast augmentation surgery. And so it was just basically, paying for a fetish, which is exactly what it was. And and then you see like 15-year-old girls by the thousands. You know, we talked to Pam about this. It's so completely crazy to think that all of a sudden there was tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of young women that actually thought that they were magically born in the wrong body, but now it's just bubbling to the surface. I mean, come on. This is this is what anorexia was.
Not organic.
35 years ago. It's a social contagion.
Yeah. I mean, there's a documentary called Disconnected that when we did our rally in Anaheim back in 2022, the director of that, I remember we were sitting at the screening of this film, and in the film, it brought up that at any given time, you can go on GoFundMe and find about 40,000 teens fundraising for double mastectomy to get their healthy boobs chopped off. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. I mean, that's astounding that 40,000 young girls are raising money
to
do this surgery.
It's so sad because, you know, I shared before, I think back, you know, to my trauma and stuff I've been through, and I share it openly. I mean, I was sexually abused as a kid by a teacher for years. Mm-hmm. And then I had developed an eating disorder. And I say, you know what? So if I go online and put up a GoFundMe to get my stomach stapled because I feel fat in my body, like mm-hmm. who's going to condone that? Nobody. But that's the kind of thinking that's happening now.
That's what's happening now. You're right. Absolutely. I'm so sorry you had to go through
Thank
that.
Thank you. It's shaped my life and my journey, and it's, you know, God uses horrible things for good, and my life path is totally been, you know, I wouldn't have chose to go through that again, but you know how it is.
No.
God can turn bad things into good, and that's what's happened. But you know, this it just makes my heart bleed. And then to look back at what we were talking about, kids have an imagination. And so now I'm thinking, I was a tomboy. Mm-hmm. So now you can't utter the fact that you're interested in more masculine or feminine things. You have to instantly, someone's going to affirm you and want to change your gender and mutilate you by giving these kids hormones or doing surgeries because they express an interest in something.
But isn't that irony?
I was going to say, Jamie Gays Against Groomers says it, you know, very pointedly. She says, this is the trans movement is the most anti-gay, you know, homophobic movement that we're experiencing. It's the ultimate conversion therapy. You know,
you read my mind because there's this ultimate irony. Somehow there can be 100 and whatever genders, but you have to affirm somebody and you have to physically change them. Well, if there's 100 and some, there's not 100 and some surgeries. There's just, it's a binary surgery.
Yeah. It's binary. I know. None of it makes sense, right?
Like, it's completely logically impossible. That is insane. Mm-hmm. And again, you read my mind, which was like, the people the most pissed off about this have to be gays. Because what? Like, so you can't be a flamboyant gay man. Now you have. Like cut your junk off and become like that doesn't make zero sense.
Right. Yeah. And it's being pushed. It's being pushed by every institution. Like this is normal. And it's like, it's not, you know, for the very tiny, tiny percentage of gender dysphoria, which usually happen in young boys between the ages of 2 and 4. Right. That's historically been the case. It's not a bunch of teenage girls that all of a sudden is like, oh, I want to be a boy. You know, I mean, clearly that's a social contagion, you know, and girls are easier to pressure into things, you know, especially teenage girls.
Well, I have a 13-year-old. What I would say is, who wants to be a teenage girl? Nobody.
Mm-hmm. Who wants to be a teenage anything, but a young woman, especially now.
It sucks. Your body is doing weird things. It's changing. I just can think back and think, we were struggling with mental health and peer pressure and not liking our body and not liking hormone changes, and it's almost like we don't even want to normalize the unhappiness of that phase. It's like we have to fix it by doing something horrific to kids, and it's just sad.
It's all
so
very sad.
This is even more frightening, but you know, we were talking, and I think I heard you say this before, the whole thing of making it acceptable for a five-year-old to choose his gender is a slippery slope to the old, if a five-year-old can choose their gender, now a five-year-old can consent to doing whatever, which means consent to sex with an adult. And
that's where this is headed.
I think people need to hear that and need to be frightened because that's what's coming next.
Well, they should be able to consent to drinking and they should be able to, we should arm them. All five-year-olds should then be armed. Like that.
Right. And get tattoos and smoke cigarettes and drink and, why not? You know, that makes a lot. I mean, according to their logic, right? That makes logical sense to do all those things. It's interesting. I was watching a video clip the other day. It was this grandmother. I mean, she must have been in her late 60s, probably hitting 70, right? And she's sitting there and they're asking her the question about her two grandchildren. And would you, you know, if they were gender confused or would you put them on hormone blockers? And she's like, absolutely. I want to support that. And she goes on and on about why that. And then the girl flips it and goes, well, would you let your grandchildren, 6 and 8 year old, get a tattoo? And she was like, oh no, that's permanent. you know, and you're just like, how does this person even like say this with a straight face in the same sentence, say that something is permanent with tattoo, but then have no clue as to the other stuff that she's supporting, that that's not permanent, you know, but they've been lied to, right? There's such a propaganda telling people that, oh, you know, you can give them hormone blockers and you can reverse it. And that's not true. Yeah, I mean,
thankfully, you know, more people are coming forward. I mean, Chloe has famously come out and others as well said, no, these effects are, you know, damaging physically long term. You can't just, you know, sure, you can stop the hormones, but the effects of having a surgery are permanent. What keeps happening to their body, the scars, the wounds, the pain. I mean,
And even, well, the hormone blockers stunt their growth. You know, I mean, they are not going to develop normally, you know, and then there's bone density issues. I mean, this is all the stuff I've learned. I mean, I've gotten such a crash course on this. I mean, 2 years ago, if you were to ask me any of these questions, I wouldn't have been able to answer any of it for you. But because of being in doing this work and being in this fight, I've had to pretty much try and understand the issue at the deepest level so that I can explain why.
Well, I think most women who have gone through life would know that even trying to balance your own hormones properly through menopause or throughout your life, I mean, is tough enough, yet giving them to a different human or children.
But the medical the medical crux here is hormone blockers.
Yes.
And the reason is what cures gender dysphoria in most kids is puberty. So if you can let them go through puberty, they will usually get out of, you know, what is it, 98% or 95% will, you know, it was a phase and they're done. If you hormone block them, it's exactly the inverse. So it's like, what, 90 or 95% will go on to cross-sex hormone surgeries and lost them. So what happened in the UK recently where they banned hormone blockers
for the child
minors is massive. So that's going to be really interesting to watch, because I think what's going to happen is this, the whole gender world will become it'll just unspool itself, because once the hormone blockers are gone, there's going to be less demand for surgery, less demand for cross-sex hormones, et cetera, et cetera. And it'll all just kind of fizzle out. I'm hoping and praying. I'm also hoping and praying that.
Yeah, I do see the tide is turning. I mean, the house of cards is falling from, you know, everything you mentioned with the UK, but also the leaked information and video from WPATH. They know that this stuff is harmful and they're trying to hide it.
Which is so sinister. Like, why are you, if it's if it's real medicine and you're helping people, then no, it's not. It's marketing. It's money. Those kind of organizations, it's clearly money. And the other thing that's really important, and I think where a group like yours can be so powerful, is the power is in the perception that everyone thinks this way but you. So if you're the average person walking around on the street, you think you're the outlier and everyone else thinks, you know, buys into this ideology en masse. That's not the case. That's why the more voices we have speaking up, the more we speak to that, No, you're not alone. You are correctly. It's okay to question. It's okay to get a little upset. It's okay to be mad as hell and not take it anymore as well.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think that's, we're starting to see that. I think there's two camps, right? Obviously the fear that we talked about earlier is very palpable, is very real, but there is people rising. I am seeing more people going, enough already. I can't sit here and be silent. You know, I mean, when I say at the beginning of Mom Army, we were getting messages from Peru and Spain and, you know, New Zealand. From Peru, she was a mom, a lawyer, an activist, and she was appalled that this gender stuff was coming into her country, being a predominantly Catholic, very religious country. She just couldn't understand it, you know. And so you're right to saying that this thing has been overtaking the globe. You know, it's not coordinated in a way that we like to think that it's a sinister agenda, but it's something that is just spreading uncontrollably, you know. And it comes through media, it comes through, you know, all of these things. But you're right, the more people speak up and the more people rise up and say, no, not under my watch, then we'll start to find each other and we will realize that we are the majority.
It's simple stuff. It's bridge club. It's book club. It's Bible study. It's just, well, you know, it's just being real nice. Be nice. I don't know. I think that we know the difference between boys and girls. That's all you got to say.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit, while we still have some time, about the dad army, how they're getting involved and what they're doing as for kids.
Yeah. It's interesting. When we started Mom Army, we started to get messages from dads and men and stuff. They're like, we love what you're doing. How can we support you? And so we would get these small donations from a lot of men. And then very quickly, you know, having conversations with my husband and a few friends, I'm like, well, yeah, like we should start a dad army. There's so many men that want to rise up and step up. And so we did just a few months after Mom Army, we started Dad Army. And pretty much Dad Army's mission is a lot more of a cultural shift that they're focused on. They want to exhibit in many, many examples throughout the organization on what strong, protective men and fathers look like. You know, and really shifting the narrative from what you were saying, the toxic masculinity is like, we can't have a society where men don't play a very huge role in how our families are raised, how society is being structured. And so that's really the focus of Dad Army. And then, of course, you know, they're kind of our de facto security guards when we're at protests and things like that, you know, because we do. I've been confronted by Antifa and trans rights activists like feet away from me and, you know, and that sort of thing. So it's really been beautiful to watch their evolution and the things that they're doing. They're launching a podcast. They are putting together their first dad retreat, you know, and that sort of thing. So things that were, yeah. And then we have guys who are contributing in so much, many ways in the content area. You know, Kelly Walker has a series called Fathering in a World Gone Mad, you know, and he's got like all these different dads that he's interviewing. So we're really trying to put out content that is really going to be helpful, you know, for dads and what that looks like and how you can get in the fight. But a lot of it is cultural, absolutely. Right? Because anything political is like cultural.
I would love to talk to Kelly. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I will definitely send Kelly over.
Absolutely. I was going to be.
Yeah. He's interviewed Victor Marx. He's interviewed Sheriff Lamb. Like, you know, some really strong figures in the space of strong protective fathers.
You haven't done it yet, May. If you want to spend 3.5 hours and start weeping, listen to Victor Marx with Sean Ryan.
No, I watched that. Oh my gosh. Yes. And I met Victor a few times, you know, he and his wife. Yeah. That he's
like literally
incredible.
If you looked up the definition of badass in a dictionary, there's just a picture of Victor.
I would agree on that one.
But he's the most soft spoken, humble sounding guy you'll ever meet. Yeah. It's
No, he's amazing. But yeah, we need examples of that. We need that to be the forefront, you know, for the new generation of dads that are coming up, that to see what that actually looks like, you know, and that's the healthy society that I want to see being built for the future.
Yeah, I think
of our
this
children.
Is all profoundly positive. I think that there's a phenomenon going on where we in COVID, I think, really brought it out, which is, you know, these three-letter agencies have been corrupt for a long time. The deep state is a reality. Like, look at the Kennedy family, for God's sake. They, you know, they murdered, you know, the brothers. But back then, we didn't really believe that existed. But it did. Now, it feels like it's 10 times worse. But it's only 10. It only feels worse because we can see it.
Because it's being exposed. And we believe it. Yeah.
Right. When you it's right see here the rot, it's like when you buy a house and you have to restore it. You go, the house looks great until you look at the foundation and you go, oh my gosh, it's rotten. This is a terrible house. Well, your perception changed because you looked under the hood, so to speak. And I think we're finally getting a look under the hood at how these big institutions have been corrupted, how entire society has been corrupted by various means. And people are like, okay, I'm done. That is a very awesome thing. It's very popular.
I agree. Yeah. And, for us as an organization and, you know, and the way I like to run things, it's we really need to be a solution-based organization. So for us, it's like we can sit here and complain and tell people about all the horrible things going on. And we can do that endlessly. There's so many stories. I get bombarded. I jokingly say when I wake up, my DMs look like another episode of South Park. Because it does. I mean, it's just one ridiculous story after another, you know? And for me, it's like, how do we transmute all of this chaos around us and really hone in first in our home. Like, how do we structure and build a strong foundation within our own homes and then work our way out from there into our sphere of influence, right? Our friends, our churches, the people around us, and then influence from there. Because if you look at the entire problem, you would just be overwhelmed and you would just want to go hide under a rock. But if you could take it and do it from within, you know, where you can have the biggest impact, which would be, you know, your own family, your own community, and start there and finding solutions. You know, what can I do? You know, how can I contribute in my small way? You know, what gifts do I have that I can bring to this fight? So that's really what we present to people. And so that it doesn't feel like this overwhelming task, because it is, you know, there's
that is outstanding. So people are going to want to get involved. How do they find you? Chapters, where, etc. Help us help you out.
Yeah. The best way is, if you're on Instagram, that's really where we occupy most of our social media space, is the.momarmy and the.dadarmy. On our website is mom-army.com. We're in the middle of an entire redesign and revamp of our website. So that's coming soon so that we can streamline people getting involved a lot better. I mean, if you want to talk about grassroots, this is as grassroots as you get. People always ask us, how are you guys funded? Oh, what funding? You know, we're basically spending our own money doing this. You know, all of my chapter leaders have been so dedicated to our mission. They're spending their own money. They're printing posters. They're doing their own thing, you know, just to kind of move, you know, our mission forward. We're finally at a place where we have some organizations, some businesses that really want to support us and help run and help give us some funding for operational costs. So my goal is to expand beyond our chapter leaders and bring in more members and people who want to get involved. But we don't want to send people into a black hole, you know, because we're not a full functioning organization. But if you DM me and you want to get involved, I will find a way to plug you in. But very soon we'll have our website where you can join as a member, find a chapter in your area, and really plug in your local area. So give us a few more weeks, and that will be ready.
I think the business element of this is critical. If, you know, May and I have talked, mm-hmm. you know, just with the, you know, our fledgling podcast and trying to make that go, it's, you know, you're trying to build a coalition of the like-minded, which means you have to bring along sponsors that think the same way, which is super powerful from in marketing for them as well, because people can know, hey, this is a really cool company that agrees with our mission. Yeah. And, you know, you saw what happened with Bud Light and now.
Oh yeah. You're seeing it with Planet Fitness.
That was just $400 million.
I mean, it's a doozy.
They lost $400 million in market capitalization.
I know. So, my son just canceled his membership and, you know, it's crazy, but they're digging their heels and they're tripling down.
Well, they will till they won't. I mean, eventually they're going to be, you know, all the way, you know, it's so that mm-hmm. I love, you know, there's a business aspect. There's a lawfare aspect. There's a protein, like all of these mm-hmm. pieces are really important.
Yeah. And, you know, we're happy to do whatever we can, you know, and bringing like-minded people. I think that's finding community. Like you said earlier, you know, sometimes you feel isolated. You feel so alone in the way you think, especially when your immediate circle doesn't think the same way. So you do feel very isolated. But just know there is a community out there that is thinking just like you do and wanting to do more. And we just all need to plug in and find each other.
I love it. Well said. All right. We will put those links for sure in our show notes. Thank you for taking the time, because I know you're so busy with all that you got going on doing, and you're all over, for being here on our podcast and sharing with our audience. And we hope this gets the message out even more and gets people motivated to get involved in their community any way they can. So thank you, Seek, for joining us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really enjoyed the conversation.
It's no secret that medicine is a bit uptight. That's why Tim and I created BS Free MD, to mix things up a little and have fun in the process. Besides, we are having these exact same discussions all the time, so we thought we might as well invite everyone to the party. If you really like us, you can get plenty more and maybe see one of Tim's cool tattoos on our Instagram or Facebook pages at BS Free MD. See you next time.
While we try to keep BS Free MD as raw and real as possible, we can't be held responsible for any medical decisions or discussions had as a result of what you've heard on the show. We know. Bummer. But the truth is, we really do care about your questions. So feel free to reach out to us by email at doc@bsfreemd.com.